scheduled matters today. One matter to pass out, if the committee will let us do that later. I think I will take up first the CSHB 681 related to default on the collection of student loans to allow the post-secondary education commission to charge the cost of collecting a student loan that is in default against the scholarship loan fund if the costs are not collected from the student loan. The bill also provides that a borrower who loses forgiveness benefits once his loan, his or her loan, is in default past 120 days past due. A loan in default interest rate would rise under Section 2 of the bill from 5% to 10%. Dr. Romesberg, would you like to speak to HB 681?
Thank you. I'm Kerry Romesberg, Director of the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And we are very interested in seeing House Bill 681 pass and hopefully be enacted into law. It does give a very good summary. It does exactly what you have just said. The principal thing that we have asked for is to have the ability to contract for collection of default loans. And Section 1 allows us to do that. It allows us to contract with an outside vendor so they can pursue those defaulted loans, charge the cost of those collections to the students so it would be a wash, no cost to the state. Allow us to reduce staff so that we could get out of that business, and hopefully it would be a much more effective way of pursuing this loan. Our feeling is this is most certainly the most generous loan program in the nation. We don't have a lot of sympathy for those individuals that allow their loans to become in default. We support completely the increase, the penalty for increasing tuition and losing their forgiveness benefits, and I would encourage this committee to act favorably upon this loan, or this bill. And if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Okay, Section 1, the fund shall be used to make scholarship loans to students selected under AS 1443-090-2160 and to pay the cost of collecting student loans that are in default if those costs are not recovered from the student. That would mean that you're talking now about collection agency type costs?
Correct. Well, the way it would work is currently if an individual, and I'll give a very simplistic example that wouldn't work quite this way, but if an individual owed $3,000 and someone said that they would charge a third of that, just a flat 33 1/3% or something, to collect them. What we'd do is that would cost another $1,000 then, and we would add that to the individual's indebtedness, then they would owe $4,000. And as that money came in, the collection agency would receive 1/4 of each payment until such time as the loan was paid off. The reason we can't do that now is the loan fund is dedicated only to additional student loans, and it wouldn't allow us to make those payments.
But normally, I didn't understand that courts allowed you to add the full cost of collection to the indebtedness.
If it's part of the promissory note, the agreement that they signed, and it indeed is, and has been all along, they can allow it.
So your present note said they will pay all the cost of collection.
That's right.
And that means you think collection commission pay to a collection company as well as attorney fees.
That's right. And court costs. And the only thing that prevents us now, we have that ability now, but the only thing is even if we add it to their indebtedness, it goes into the revolving fund, and we cannot pay those costs out of that fund.
So you have no source of money to contract with anybody?
That's correct.
Because?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
what is your estimated cost on doing this?
It's going to depend really on the rate that we get in terms of the bids. Right now, the private collection agencies are bidding somewhere or charging somewhere between 20 to 40% of what they collect for the pursuit of defaulted loans. And that's through banks and other such agencies. So ours would probably be somewhere in that range. And currently, what we have in default, we've got $9 million that's in default left.
For the in-state or out?
How much? $8.8 million.
For the in-state or out?
Most are in.
Most
of
them employed?
We don't know. We don't know that. If they're unemployed, we have a deferment category that will allow them up to 12 months when interest doesn't accrue and they don't have to make payments.
shall be made for payment of attorney fees and costs of court if either are owed or both are incurred in collection of the amount owed on the loan. Where is the authority for paying a collection agency a commission and charging that back against the borrower?
In the promissory note, we have the language in there that the cost of collection, if the loan becomes default, the cost of collection will be borne by the individual. And the Attorney General's office has indicated that that would cover all costs, including court costs, the attorney costs, and such costs that will be charged for those. It's not in the statute. The statute doesn't say that it can, but it doesn't say it can't either. And the fact that promissory note that they've willingly signed indicates that, I guess, fine.
You have a written Attorney General's opinion to this effect?
I don't believe we do. That was
I just asked the question because I've never heard of such a thing, and I'm dubious about it, because that's a significant addition to the indebtedness.
Oh, considerably.
No, you mentioned 33%. I understand it could be 50%.
It can go that high. If I can't imagine that a successful bidder for this would be in the 50% bracket, but it would be possible.
All right, we understand Section 1. Section 2 is the section I mentioned that raises the interest rate. That's a disincentive to let your loan become delinquent.
Correct.
And
Section 3 is similar. And now, the thing to remember is with Section 2 and 3 particularly, is those would be for loans made from this point forward. We can't go back and change any contract that's already out. So any individual, that $200 million that we already loaned out, 5% is going to remain 5%, and they're still going to get forgiveness benefits even if they're in default.
Can you advise us that there was over $8 million in delinquent loans or loans in default? Mm-hmm. Were you using the 128 standard?
Yes.
And those would be 120 days exclusive of the cases where a moratorium has been raised. All right. Further questions, Senator Hunt?
Just a technical question. When we increase forgiveness and change forgiveness back and forth, we're adding to the benefit of an existing contract. If someone has, say, a loan that's been out for 7 or 8 years, was out before the forgiveness been applied to you, can, if they're delinquent, can that be dropped back at least to the point of their contract value?
No, Senator, unfortunately, we can't. What we did, once the legislature changed the law and increased the benefit, we wrote to all those, to everybody that had an outstanding loan, and said, you want to amend your contract, and actually sent them an amendment that was attached to their promissory note, and gave them that increased benefit.
It became a contractual benefit.
Yes, that's right. It was voluntary on their part, and most everybody said they might have had it.
This, Mr. Chairman, if I may, you can't go retroactive on this.
No, we can't.
Nothing in their contract, too.
No. What we could do, of course, is write them and ask them if they willingly accept this kind of change, and I don't think we'd get a large response.
Okay, fair enough. Anybody going to return?
Yes.
We'll hold this aside then, unless you have something else to talk about.
No.
No one else is here to talk about this, so we'll go then to the World War II film matter. House Bill 470, Representative Fritz. Do you wish to address the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Otto Fritz, Representative from District 5. And I'm here to ask you to favorably consider a substitute House Bill Number 470 Finance, which is an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Education, Alaska Historical Commission, to produce a documentary film related to the participation of Alaska in World War II and providing for an effective date. For your information, Mr. Chairman, I'm a veteran of World War II and of the Aleutian campaign. And as such, I've been interested in what the rest of the country seems to know about the Aleutian campaign, which is very low. Throughout the state and in the archives of the Department of Defense, the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, there are bits and fragments of photographs and movie film that, if they could be gathered together, would make a very impressive documentary film of an event that is very important in the history of our nation and the history of our state. And I, in my backup information, have letters from various patriotic organizations, veterans of foreign wars, American Legion, and organizations of that kind that are also interested in having the part that Alaska played in the Finance Committee, the original request of $250,000 was reduced to $115,900. And the person who will probably do the most towards getting this material amassed, if this should be favorably considered by you and the Senate, feels that the $250,000 request is appropriate and that the present amount of $115,900 is not enough to do the job, because it will require trips out on the Aleutian Islands, which, as you know, Mr. Chairman, are expensive, trips to Washington, and searching in the places that I mentioned, plus other areas where important information that have to do with the development of this film could be found. The Japanese government has also indicated an interest in contributing movies from the Japanese point of view towards the development of this film. So my recommendations are that the amount be increased to the original request, and I respectfully ask that you favorably consider this legislation. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I might say that I managed to get out there a couple of times myself during the so-called 1,000-mile secret war. That's about what it amounted to. I think the bill here is most appropriate to bring this thing to the people of Alaska and the rest of the nation in the manner which it should be. And if it's in position at the proper time, I would move that we amend this bill to change the funding to $250,000 at each point where it says $115,900. I would move that we change it to $250,000 on the National Anniversary Center.
Objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chairman, we can send on up.
Mr. DiArmo is here to.
My name is R.N. DiArmo. I'm a member of the Alaska Historical Commission. Have been most of the time since its inception, some 10 years ago. Neither I nor other members of the commission have any problem with the bill itself or the conception. We do have some concerns about how it's administered. I think it was 6 years ago we had a very similar appropriation for another purpose that was sponsored or requested by one of the Native corporations. The appropriation was passed, and the matter was referred to the Attorney General's office for instructions how to proceed. We were advised that we must call for bids for this kind of an appropriation. And when we consulted with the Native Corporation, they dropped the whole thing. They were no longer interested if it had to be bid.
I guess that still would apply, but apparently it's sufficient interest to get the job done.
There are more than one party interested in doing this. I've had inquiries from Hollywood and professional film people who are interested in coming up and doing the job.
Are there questions, Mr. DiArmo? No, we appreciate your coming in this afternoon.
Thank you.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, if we have no further witnesses to testify on this, I would ask unanimous consent that House Bill 470 be moved to complete the past recommendation or individual recommendation.
Have a CS with the new figure.
Right.
Any objection to that? Hearing none, that will be ordered. And we'll also now move on to 681. Is there objection to reporting 681?
Okay, Chairman, I would so move.
Objection to 681. That is ordered. It's going to be enacted on 681. We'll go then to 548. Health aides. 581 is for you. The provisions of the bill are that each qualified regional health organization is entitled to $30,000 a year for health aid program. Each regional health organization or local health organization is entitled to $8,000 a year per health
position paper on the committee substitute 548. It pretty thoroughly explains the department's position on it. Briefly, the department is heartily in favor of this bill. I would like to point out to the committee that since 1982, the state has been involved in helping to fund the training and supervision of some of the community health aides through direct legislative grants, and that this trend has continued throughout the present fiscal year, and that there's approximately in the 85 budget about $1,100,000 in the governor's budget for continuation of this. I can unequivocally say that the need for state support of the community health aid programs has been recognized as a means of addressing the problems that are associated with health care in the rural communities. While the federal government supports the basic level of service, there are insufficient funds to meet the demands for the training of these people and, what is equally important, the field supervision by qualified instructors. In addition to insufficient federal base, we feel the state should be involved because there are other issues involving the responsibility for rural health services. Basically, theoretically, the community health aides that are out there now are supposedly only supposed to provide services to IHS beneficiaries, but by virtue of the fact that they are the only community-based medical provider in well over 200 communities, they provide care for the non-beneficiaries also. This bill has an additional provision that similarly trained individuals, and we talk about similar to a project which is underway at the present time in Southeast Alaska called the Health Observers, that these kinds of people would also be eligible for these training dollars, and that this would take care of the relatively handful of communities that are not covered at the present time by community health aides, and are basically, their population is predominantly non-native. I guess about the only other thing to say is that out of about the, and there is a fiscal note attached, and out of the, with my own analysis, I think it's about $2 million, almost $300,000 that would be needed if this program was funded. About $1,100,000 would be offset from what is in the existing governor's budget, so that the additional funds required would be about $1,000,002. The fiscal note you have in front of you is a revised one. Representative Herman called our attention that we had offset, I think it was $147,000 that the Kuskokwim Community College had for training, but that was for not only this program, but for three other associate degree programs. And on reconsideration and reflection, we agreed with her contention that these dollars really should not be considered part of an offset. We have been studying the whole issue of rural health care and what we envision for the state, and what is in place in many parts of the state right now and yet not complete, is the fact that starting with your larger communities where you have hospitals and physicians, you go to smaller communities where, and in the larger ones, there are mid-level providers, there are nurse practitioners or physician assistants, and that they in turn are involved in provision of the health care for surrounding communities, and that when you go out beyond that, in well over 200 communities, the only trained health care provider is the community health aide. They really are the backbone of the provision of medical care in the state. The major deficits in the program, we feel, are the fact that the training is insufficient, the supervision covers the entire state. The headquarters for Alaska Big Health Service in southeastern Alaska is not Edgecombe, but more importantly, Search, the southeast Regional Health Corporation, which is the Native Health Corporation, covers all of southeast Alaska. They're headquartered, by the way, in Juneau.
Okay, that's what I want to make sure. Apparently, the Charter Health Aid, John, like to say, means the person has completed 3 levels of community health aid training. Now, if they got their training somewhere other north and south, or the North Hospital, or the Community College in Bethel, probably last year, Native Health Service, they wouldn't be qualified, would they?
Unless, Mr. Chairman, unless they came in under a summary training program, and basically all of the community health aides in the state are trained in one of the previously mentioned locations. In addition to that, we are talking about a prototype project which we have underway in Southeast Alaska, Search called, and it's alluded to here on the second page. We call them health observers, where we talk about similarly trained individuals on the second page for our position.
And this, according to this, as we know, Mr. Chairman, we make a change.
Yes.
But if we're going to go on in perpetuity on this, I see there's about $100,000 change each year in the cost of it.
Chairman, Senator Moss, the state's contribution to it is, you're correct on that. However, enactment of this bill would reach the saturation point immediately, and there would not be the request for these kinds of additional dollars every year. Two things, sir, are extant right now, I guess. One is that in many cases the people are underpaid. That's the first thing. The second thing is by the state playing a larger role in the training and supervision of these people, this would allow the release of some of the money that is now spent on training and so on to be put into salaries. I speak for the commissioner, and that he is exceedingly desirous of seeing that one, the status of these people be elevated, two, that they have the necessary training, and three, that they have the necessary backup. One of the problems, which you don't allude to in the paper, is the fact that in many communities there's only one of these individuals, and they are on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and for them to get respite or to get away from it, the services of an alternate have to be used. And one of the biggest problems we have is the alternates are exceedingly poorly trained. Now, if this piece of legislation is enacted, the department proposes to itself adds, as you can see, $160,000 there. The other figure of increases is that there is built into this a 5% inflation cost of living allowance. And that accounts for the change in the dollars in the program.
Well, when you train a healthy, what do you do?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the primary training consists of a minimum of 10 weeks and three different courses that they have to undergo and pass in the first year to even become certified as community health aides. From there on, your training is of two types. One is refresher training. The second thing is to increase their scope of knowledge.
Well, at some point, do we reach a place where we have trained people to be able to be your at some point, we have 200 people in 200 villages involved in this who have had 10-week training. And I know the state-of-the-art changes, but on the other hand, since doctors don't go back to medical school for 4-year medicine, and the community health aide doesn't have to do this annually.
But annual training is necessary. Continuing medical education is a must. I'm not sure about the legal profession, but the medical profession requires that we have 100 hours of continuing medical education every 2 years. It's a matter of retaining our licensure. Many of the specialty boards, they have to become recertified. OB/GYN requires that every 7 years, they have to be recertified. In other words, they have to take the basic examinations that turn them into specialist, the obstetrician and gynecologist to start with. And this is the trend throughout most, most professional fields, is that continuing education is a must. Now, we talk about 10 weeks as the basic course. After that, we're talking about a shorter period of time every year. But people must have continuous refresher education, and they must be continually supervised. And then again, I might point out this, that there is turnover. People do not stay in the occupation forever. So that means that they have new people, which require that they go back to the initial basic training.
Are there other questions, Senator Hill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, in our packet there are several references to the individual pay and health aides. I don't see any of the bill that directly addresses that, but it is the intent part of this fiscal year to increase the pay scale of health aides.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Helfer, we have insisted that these funds be only used for training and supervision. Now that, you might say, is a euphemism, that as I said earlier, that this will allow them to take some of the monies that were being put into training and supervision to increase pays, because we have furnished the committee with backup information which shows a wide variation in the pay scales of these people. I would say that conservatively about 60% of them are basically underpaid, and that hopefully that some of these funds would, by virtue of increasing, and would substitute also for some of the training and supervision dollars that are now. We have been insistent that the state not become involved in contributing towards salaries, because we have a basic fare that if we did, that's all the federal government would need to